This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. I'm Eleanor Hall. This Tuesday, the funeral for father and daughter whose drownings have highlighted the plight of Central American refugees seeking to reach the US. And could China's rising power force Australia's political leaders into making a confronting choice, whether to acquire nuclear weapons?
Down the track, I think this is a question which Australian governments and, of course, Australian peoples will, unless we're very lucky, find ourselves having to reconsider. What the right answer would be, I find myself very difficult to say.
We begin in the Australian Parliament, where politicians are right now deciding which of us will get a tax cut and when. The federal government is urging the Labor Party to back its plan, but the final decision may be in the hands of a couple of crossbench senators. Political reporter Stephanie Boris has the latest.
Parliament House has been pretty quiet the past few months, but today it's full of politicians for the first time since the election.
Senators, members of the House of Representatives, His Excellency the Governor-General has appointed me as his deputy to declare open the Parliament of the Commonwealth.
With the 46th Parliament now up and running, tax cuts are first on the agenda. Prime Minister Scott Morrison wants the multi-billion dollar package passed by the end of the week.
A strong economy always needs lower taxes. A stronger economy is not achieved by higher taxes.
Under the plan, low and middle income earners would receive immediate tax relief of up to $1,000, while tax brackets would be changed to address bracket creep between 2022 and 2025. But the government doesn't have the numbers to get its package passed.
We'll continue to work these issues through the Parliament, and as the week progresses, I think people will see where people ultimately place their support.
Opposition leader Anthony Albanese is urging the government to make some changes.
We understand that the economy needs a stimulus, and that's why we want stage one of the tax cuts passed immediately and stage two brought forward as well.
The government has no intention of altering the tax package, so it's looking for the support of four crossbenchers.
Look, we're getting very close with the tax proposal. We certainly don't want to see hard-working Australians miss out on getting their extra money in their pay packet.
Sterling Griff is one of two Centre Alliance senators. He says tax cuts are necessary, but the government also needs to address rising energy prices.
So at this stage, we are holding off our final decision until we finalise exactly where we're at with discussions with government in relation to reducing energy costs.
The government has locked in the support of crossbencher Corey Bernardi, which means the multi-billion dollar package could lie in the hands of one colourful senator.
Thank you. It's great to be back. Thank you.
Tasmanian Senator Jackie Lambie was forced to resign from Parliament in 2017 because she was a dual citizen. With her paperwork now sorted, she's returned and is in a powerful position, but she's yet to make up her mind on which way she'll vote.
Mate, I haven't got enough information on the table. I'm still waiting for the information to come through, so I'm not going left or right on this.
Like the Centre Alliance senators, Jackie Lambie wants the rising cost of energy addressed.
So this has been a big picture of ours, trying to get those energy prices down. There's no doubt about that. So I fully support anything that wants to get those energy prices down. But like I said, I'm still going to need a few more days. Just there's facts I'm waiting to come in. There's still a few more people I need to speak to.
A sign she's willing to negotiate with the government. Labor could also end up coming to the table. While they are pushing for changes, Shadow Treasurer Jim Chalmers hasn't ruled out a plan B.
Well, we've reserved our rights on the final decision in the Senate. We've said that if our amendments fail in the Senate, that we'll consider our options then. That's entirely responsible and normal for an opposition party to do.
So when will we know who gets a tax cut? The government and Labor agree the issue needs to be finalised this week. Opposition leader Anthony Albanese.
We're prepared and support the House and the Senate remaining here in Canberra on Thursday, continuing to sit until these issues are all dealt with.
The tax cut package will be introduced to the House of Representatives today, and it's expected to be debated at length in the Senate on Thursday.
Stephanie Boris reporting. One of Australia's most influential foreign policy strategists has issued a warning today to the Australian government that it needs to get off the fence and decide where Australia stands on the China-US battle for leadership status in our region. In his provocative new book, How to Defend Australia, Emeritus Professor of Strategic Studies at the Australian National University, Hugh White, sets out the tough choices facing Australia. One of the most confronting options is that Australia becomes a nuclear-armed nation. Professor White is a former defence and intelligence official and was an advisor to Prime Minister Bob Hawke. He joined me in our Canberra studio.
Look, I think it's very urgent, Eleanor, because we are seeing right now in Asia the biggest shift in Asia's strategic affairs we've seen really since Australia was settled by Europeans well over 200 years ago because of the extraordinary rise of China. And this means a major shift in the distribution of power. And I think the hope that both sides of Australian politics have entertained for so long, that America will somehow still remain the dominant power in Asia, even when China's economy is, as our own Treasury estimates, nearly twice as big as America, just within a decade or so, it's just unrealistic. So we now have to accommodate ourselves, start adjusting to a very different kind of Asia with a very different power structure, which will pose different kinds of threats and challenges to us. And that's really what the book's all about.
What choices does Australia have in this new environment?
If we could get what we really wanted, of course, we'd like America to remain the dominant power forever, because that has been very good for us. That's no longer going to happen. So I think the big choice for us is whether we aim to be a middle power or whether we just accept that we're going to be one of those smaller powers that has to take what comes at them. And I think it's too early for Australia to resign itself to being just a small power in the Asian century. We should look at what would be required to be a middle power. And in military terms, that means the capacity to defend ourselves, and I would say also our close neighbours, from a major power without relying on a great power like America. And the alternative to that, really, is to be a small power. And a small power is what most countries in the world are. They're countries that just have to roll with the punches, hope for the best. And I don't think that's the kind of future for Australia that we'd hope for.
What's your assessment of how seriously the Morrison government is looking at this?
Well, it's early days, of course, for the Morrison government, but I think they are inclined, from everything they've said so far, to take on trust the assessments they've inherited from their predecessors, their coalition predecessors and also their Labor predecessors. And what we've seen over the last decade or so is a slow acknowledgement that China's rising power is making a difference to our strategic situation, but no acknowledgement of how fast that's happening and where it's leading. There's still a very strong tendency to assume that America will remain the dominant power and that what Australia needs to do is just tune up our capacity to support America as it pushes back against China's challenge. And I think that's wrong. I think we do have to accept that we can no longer simply assume that America will be there for us, no longer assume that America will keep China under control, and no longer will assume that America will defend us if something goes wrong. And that's why I think the Morrison government hasn't really acknowledged the scale of the strategic challenge which they face on their watch.
We're already seeing a dangerous trade war between the US and China. Does the current political leadership in these two countries make a military conflict between the US and China more likely?
Well, I think the risk of a military conflict between the US and China is certainly high, and higher than most people understand, because I think they are not just involved in this very dangerous and damaging trade war, but also in a very clear, direct strategic contest over which of them will be the dominant power in Asia. And that is the kind of direct clash of major strategic agendas which has caused major wars in the past, like the First World War. Trump himself, much less sure, and that's one of the reasons why I think the risk of America withdrawing from Asia is much higher than I think our governments here in Canberra have yet acknowledged.
So if China wins in this strategic standoff with the US, either militarily or because the US withdraws, what sort of power will China seek to exert over Australia?
That's the big unknown question. Look, we don't know. We don't know what kind of dominant power, what kind of hegemon China would turn out to be, and I suspect they don't either. In some ways, the signs are quite hopeful. China is not like the Soviet Union. It doesn't have an overt agenda to fundamentally change the political texture, the social texture, the economic texture of countries like Australia. But it is possible that as China's power grows, it will become more ambitious. It's possible that it would start to demand things of us that we wouldn't want to surrender. Now, I'm not saying for a moment that I think China, as its power grows, will necessarily threaten Australia. But I do think we have to recognise that in an Asia in which China is the dominant power, the possibility of that happening is much higher than we've been familiar with hitherto. And we therefore have to take more seriously the question of what we do to respond to it if it happens.
Your book sets out in detail what our defence options are, depending on the decisions we make strategically. One of the most confronting sections is your discussion about nuclear weapons. Now, you say the Australian government needs to consider nuclear weapons. Why?
Well, this is confronting. I find it very confronting myself. I find the prospect of Australia even contemplating this option appalling. But I think we have to recognise that the circumstances under which Australia took a decision 50 years ago not to acquire nuclear weapons are changing, because ever since then we have been very confident that we could depend on the United States to deter any threat of nuclear attack against Australia. We therefore have to recognise that if we continue to rely on the United States, our risk of facing a nuclear threat, of being unable to respond to nuclear blackmail, is very high.
China is, of course, a nuclear-armed power. Couldn't nuclear weapons in Australia make us more of a target?
Well, that's certainly a possibility, and one of the points I'm making in the book, that in any decision we make about our nuclear strategic future, we'd need to recognise how nuclear weapons erode as well as potentially enhance one's security. And I think that's a very difficult balance. I'm far from sure what the answer is myself, but I do think it's a question we'll have to ask ourselves seriously.
Some frightening decisions. Hugh White, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you.
And that's strategic analyst Hugh White from the Australian National University. A man and his young daughter, who drowned while trying to cross into the US, have been laid to rest a week after they were found floating lifeless in the Rio Grande. Their deaths have highlighted the risks many of those fleeing Central America for the US are facing. Barbara Miller compiled this report, and a warning, it does contain distressing details.
It was a private funeral after a very public death. A 25-year-old man, Oscar Ramirez Martinez, and his daughter Valeria, not even 2 years old, were photographed as they lay face down in the Rio Grande after they drowned while trying to reach the US from Mexico. The little girl was still tucked inside her father's T-shirt. A woman attending the funeral spoke to media afterwards, saying her heart broke for the family.
It's hard and it's terrible, the pain that they are going through. It's an incomparable pain that only God can feel. We came to accompany them. They were members of the congregation.
They fled El Salvador. They fled our country. It is our fault.
El Salvador's president, Nayib Bukele, has acknowledged that his country must do more to make life safer at home.
We haven't been able to provide anything, not a decent job, not a decent school. What if this little girl would have had a decent school here, a decent healthcare system for her, her family, a decent house with water supply, a decent job, living in a zone where a gang member will not come and rape her and kill her family? I think migrant is a right, but it should be an option, not an obligation.
In San Martin in San Salvador, where Oscar Martinez and his daughter hailed from, the local priest said life was tough.
En los tres años y medio que llevo, podría...
In my 3.5 years here, 90% of families in the community have suffered violence. It fills us with sadness. You don't see the gangs in plain sight, but they are here. Just a week ago, they killed a young man in an alley nearby.
The San Martin mayor, Victor Manuel Rivera, called on the government to act soon to prevent more deaths.
The main problem in our country is job opportunities. And that's why youth leave the country. And it's unfortunate what happened while crossing the river. We call on the government to create employment stability along with guarantees for investors so that they can come to our country and create opportunities and avoid tragedies like this.
Tears streaming down her face, the dead man's mum, Rosa, spoke to the BBC about her loss. I cried a lot when we said goodbye because I felt in my heart it was the last time I was going to embrace him, she said. Rosa Ramirez is mourning her son and her granddaughter. On the 18th of July, she would be 2 years old, she said, of the little girl. She's left a hole because she was a joyful girl. This house isn't the same without her shouts and the sound of her. No, Oscar Martinez and his daughter are among several hundred migrants known to die each year trying to cross into the US. As the Trump administration talks tough on illegal migration, their deaths have shone a light on the circumstances many of those who make the perilous journey are facing at home. But Mr. Martinez's mother says she'd tell others not to try to make it to the US.
Que no intenten eso.
Rosa Ramirez says she knows everything is very difficult in El Salvador, but she says our lives are more valuable.
Barbara Miller with that report. This is The World Today, and if you miss a program, you can find us on the ABC Listen app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at ABC News, and you can follow me at Eleanor Hall 1. Getting stuck in traffic on the way to work is a familiar frustration for many Australians. And as continuing high house prices push more people to the urban fringes, even cities that used to have an easy commute are becoming congested. Felicity Ogilvie reports from the increasingly crowded Hobart.
Hobart used to be a place where people moved to get away from mainland big city problems such as overcrowding and bad traffic. But sadly for locals, that's changing. What used to be a quick 25-minute drive from the airport and nearby towns into Hobart can now take an hour.
You've almost got to take chill pills before you get into the traffic because it is frustrating and it does build up on you.
Kerry Vincent is the mayor of one of Tasmania's fastest-growing council areas, Sorell.
We have a massive amount of people moving down this way to take advantage of the fair house and land packages. But of course it creates a conga line of vehicles trying to get in and out of Hobart.
The state government wants to fix the problem by widening the highway, and it's facing a tough choice on how to do it. One option is to build a roundabout on Robin Lewis's land. This bush block is the only place in the world that a small pink and white orchid grows.
Pretty amazing, isn't it, to think that, you know, right here, you know, this is the only place they've found, so, you know, we're really quite concerned about the proposed development.
The Milford Lake orchid is so rare that its owner, Robin Lewis, has had to keep the exact location of the plant a secret.
You know, there are orchid collectors around the world who go around pinching orchids, and, you know, this is what we were trying to deter.
If the orchid survives, the road widening will come at the cost of the Tasmania Golf Club across the road. The roundabout will instead go through the fairway where Andrew Todd plays.
If the road is widened on our side, there'll be a huge roundabout basically placed in the middle of one of our fairways, the 16th fairway. And also we do not have that much extra space on the peninsula to create another hole.
Engineer Shane Abel is working for the golf club suggesting a new plan.
The simple solution for that section of Tasman Highway is to basically just widen out the existing road to four lanes and put three right turn bays in. And if you do that, you'll have no impact on the golf course and no impact on the orchids.
The state government has still to make up its mind as to what option it chooses and is still taking public comments on the proposed roadwork. For many Hobartians, though, such as Sorell Mayor Kerry Vincent, it's an issue with wider implications for their city and their lifestyles.
The fact that we do like to jump in our cars and just tear around to wherever we want to go and park as close as we can, those days are very quickly coming to an end. We do have to change the way we think as a society and the way we travel around.
But public transport is yet to take off in a state where people would rather drive.
Felicity Ogilvie reporting from Hobart. Well, let's get out of Wimbledon, where a 15-year-old American tennis player has taken on champion Venus Williams and won. It was one of two upsets in the opening round of the tournament. Australian Ashley Barty is preparing for her first match tonight, as Isabel Rowe reports.
She's the youngest player at Wimbledon this year, and in straight sets, she's turfed out the tournament's oldest player, 39-year-old Venus Williams. Corey Goff, nicknamed Coco, was a wildcard entrant into the tournament and made the most of the opportunity.
I never thought this would happen. I'm literally living my dream right now. Not many people get to say that.
Her parents watching on from the stands. Corey Goff finished with her hands on her head, appearing scarcely able to believe her performance against her idol.
She just told me that congratulations and to keep going and good luck. After a match, I told her that just thank you for everything she did. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her. And I was just saying, telling her that she's so inspiring. And I always wanted to tell her that. And even though I met her before, I guess now I had the guts to.
Venus Williams seemed just as stunned.
Yeah, she did everything well today. I mean, she put the ball in the court, which was much better than I did. And serve well, move well. It was a great match for her.
What do you think of her future? Could she go to the very top, do you feel?
I mean, the sky's the limit. It really is.
There was more emotion after world number two, Naomi Osaka's first match. Osaka lost 7-6, 6-2 to Yulia Putintseva, her second consecutive loss to the Kazakh player. Afterwards, Osaka walked out of a post-match press conference, saying she felt she was about to cry.
So I feel like I'm about to cry.
I'm sorry, we have to leave that there.
Naomi Osaka's heartbreaking loss is good news for Australia's Ashleigh Barty. The newly crowned world number one opens her campaign tonight against China's Zheng Saisai. Osaka would have been one of Barty's main competitors for the top ranking, but three others remain poised to fight for number one.
Good luck, Ashleigh Barty, tonight. Isabel Rowe reporting. Well, the Reserve Bank Board is meeting this lunchtime to decide whether or not to cut the cash rate to a new historic low of 1%. It follows months of disappointing data on the Australian economy. To talk us through what the Reserve Bank Board might have to say later today, I'm joined now in the studio by business reporter David Taylor. David, we've been hearing that even though it cut rates last month, the Reserve Bank is gearing up again. What are economists saying today about the likelihood of a cut?
Look, Eleanor, I think the markets is probably the best place to look at the likelihood of a rate cut. And the money markets are pricing in a 70% chance that interest rates will fall to 1%, or the official cash rate, I should say, should fall to 1%. Now, the key aspect of this, of course, is that if the Reserve Bank does cut the cash rate, there's an element, so why is there an element of it not being 100%? There's this suggestion that if the Reserve Bank cut last month and then again this month, that it might spook the horses, that it might create some sense of, I hate to use the word panic, but you know, if Scott Morrison and Josh Frydenberg are saying the economy is going okay, Philip Lowe, the governor of the Reserve Bank, is saying the economy is going okay, just needs a little bit of push. Everyday folks out there might think, well, we had a cash rate cut last month and then again this month. What's that telling us about the economy? It might actually have the opposite effect to what the policymakers are hoping for, in the sense that they might think, well, yes, we want to get consumers spending again because they'll have more money in their pockets if the interest rates come down. But what if this is telling us that there's worse to come?
And retailers were, in fact, warning about that today, weren't they?
Indeed. And that's you've hit the nail on the head with this cycle that everyone's worried about, because if there are lower interest rates, maybe businesses can spend more, can hire more people, then can get more money in their pockets to spend at the shops, and that means they can get more profits and hire more. And it's all tied up in this retail sector. But yes, if there's an element of businesses worried about the future, consumers worried about the future, why are we seeing, you know, more government spending, tax cuts, interest rate cuts? It just might create an even lower consumer sentiment than we have now, and that could hurt the economy.
But of course, the Reserve Bank is looking at a range of economic figures that have been coming in, and coming in quite negatively over the last few months. What are likely to be the most persuasive numbers that they'll look at?
Look, I think it is front and centre, the unemployment rate. So the jobless rate at the moment is above 5%. The Governor, Philip Lowe, says it needs to come under 5%. We talk about full employment, and I guess most folks would think full employment means that everybody has a job. That's not the case. Full employment basically means if you want a job, you can have a job. So in that sense, if the Reserve Bank can get the unemployment rate under 5% to what it calls the full employment rate of 4.5%, then that'll be enough to get wages lifting, because there'll be enough people in jobs to have bargaining power, to get higher rates of pay, to go out in the shops, spend up with confidence, and of course the economy, the economic machine kicks in. It actually looks like the unemployment rate's going up, though, at the moment. And the Reserve Bank has said over and over again, it's looking at the trend unemployment rate, and that looks to be rising. So it's just a very tricky spot to be in at the moment. It looks like the jobless rate is going in the wrong direction.
A difficult decision for the board. David Taylor, thank you.
Thanks.
And that's all from the World Today team for this Tuesday. Linda Mottram and the PM team will be along this evening, and we'll be back at the same time tomorrow. I'm Eleanor Hall. Have a lovely afternoon.
Hi, I'm Stephen Stockwell.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre, and we're from the ABC's daily news podcast, The Signal. The election is over and Parliament's back, but what exactly is the government planning, apart from tax cuts?
Today we take you through the big players and the likely battlegrounds for 2019.
Look for The Signal on the ABC Listen app or wherever you usually find your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.